This webcast is a service of SDPB. Good, useful, and full of wonder. SDPB.
You may be seated.
Thank you.
I just want to note, before we get started with our second argument, we have some students this morning from Flandreau High School. Yeah, okay, there we go. And Sioux Falls Roosevelt. All right, great. Well, good to have both schools here this morning. As we start the second case, we have Judge Jennifer Mamiga sitting with us in place of Justice Patty Devaney this morning. She's a Second Circuit judge here. We appreciate Judge Mamiga sitting with us on this case. The second appeal we will hear this morning is appeal number 31154, State of South Dakota versus Wiley Pickner. Aaron Hanke is arguing on behalf of the appellant, State of South Dakota. Not used to seeing the state on that side of the... And Justin Bell is arguing on behalf of the defendant, Mr. Pickner, the appellee. Ms. Hanke, you may proceed with your argument.
May it please the court and counsel. We are here today on a very narrow but extremely important issue. Can the circuit court grant a suspended imposition of sentence after a judgment of conviction has been entered? And the simple answer is no. It does not have the authority to do that. Wiley Pickner was convicted at trial of third-degree rape. The circuit court sentenced him to a prison term of 10 years with 7 years suspended. He served his sentence and was on parole and filed a motion to modify his sentence under 23A31(1) or Rule 35, requesting a suspended imposition of sentence. Over the state's objection, the circuit court granted the motion and vacated the judgment, entered the suspended imp. It took Pickner off of parole and moved him over to probation. And while the circuit court does have the authority to enter suspended imps in general, in this particular situation, it does not have that authority.
Why does it not have the authority?
Because when you look at the statutory requirements, Your Honor, for what is required to enter a suspended imposition of sentence, there must be a verdict or guilty plea of a felony not punishable by life or death. The defendant could never have been convicted of a crime before. And in this particular instance, without entering a judgment of guilt, the court can enter a suspended imposition of sentence. And here the court did enter a judgment of guilt. He went to prison. And also...
Does it matter that he went to prison?
It doesn't matter. I think it adds a second layer of why this was in error, Your Honor, because, again, the defendant must be placed on probation.
So in the state's view, whether the court had initially sent the defendant to... penitentiary or had suspended his sentence, put him on probation, courts without authority in either situation.
Correct, Your Honor. You have to give that suspended imposition up front, so to speak. It's not a kind of a dangling carrot, like defendant behaves and does all these things and he can earn it. A suspended imposition.
Where does the statute say it has to be done up front?
Because we cannot have the... entering of judgment of guilt, and to place a person on probation or to send them to prison, you have that judgment of guilt.
So you kind of changed the order in the statute. I think in the 19th statute, though, it reads may without entering a judgment of guilt.
Correct.
Give a suspended imposition of sentence. You read it in the opposite direction. You can't enter a judgment of guilt. You read the statute to say there is no circumstance that the court can enter a judgment of guilt and still give a suspended imposition.
I read the statute to say the circuit court may enter a suspended imp without entering a judgment of guilt. So the may goes back to the court has the ability to enter a suspended imposition, but these are the conditions that must apply.
Makes sense, right? So you've got a valid judgment. Let's say the judgment here, as a matter of fact.
Right.
At some point, it becomes final on direct review, right?
Correct.
We have direct review, or we don't, and we get outside the cert period. We have a final, valid conviction.
Correct.
If it's affirmed. And so now what? What happens, and how can, under what ways, within the realm of criminal law or post-conviction relief, could we conceive of a court revisiting that and saying, you know what, I'm going to take that valid conviction, I'm going to throw it away. And we know that habeas is one, DNA exoneration, whatever. This is none of those.
Correct, Your Honor. Typically, when we see a circuit court vacating a judgment, it's in that exact situation. It's a post-conviction relief type situation. And obviously, with those, there's different hearings, what have you. As far as I am aware, in this specific situation and what happened in the Pickner case, the court does not have the ability to vacate that judgment just to enter a suspended imposition of sentence.
No court does, under your theory.
Correct, Your Honor.
And maybe that's right. We'll hear from Mr. Bell and we'll put it all together. But the one thing that seems to recommend that view, at least intuitively, is that a judge does have to have some authority to throw away an otherwise valid conviction.
Correct, Your Honor. The court has to have authority, in essence, to do anything it does.
So when we're talking about timing and whether you can do it before or after, there's a larger scope issue at play, and that is the validity of that judgment. And it becomes, at some point, if not sacrosanct, at least final, and the law loves finality.
Yes,
it's one of the things that we're geared to do. Courts in the wheels of justice grind slowly sometimes, but when we get a result, we want it to be a pretty good result.
Correct, Your Honor. So in this situation, Mr. Pickner...
Can I ask you, though, under Rule 35, I'd just like your take on this. It says a court may reduce a sentence. How do you interpret the word reduce a sentence? Do you interpret it as simply reducing the length of the sentence or maybe even the character of the sentence? In other words, going to a suspended imp. I asked that in relation to the 23A-2719, which gives the courts continuing jurisdictions to suspend a sentence. And there, I think the statute specifically talks about suspending a sentence. And so it seems to me that it talks about the length of the sentence. So why use different words? Why use suspend in one statute and reduce the sentence in the other one? What does that mean?
Well, Your Honor, so very much a reduce is less than. And in this, a suspended imposition is not a less than sentence. A suspended imposition is kind of its own animal where...
Is it not a sentence?
But you could suspend a sentence without suspending the imposition.
Correct, Your Honor. Correct, Your Honor. I'm sorry. A suspended imposition is still considered a sentence, yes, because it's a suspended imposition of sentence. And so essentially what happens is the person is, as the court knows, the person is put on probation. If you comply with the conditions of probation and whatever other terms the court places on the individual, as long as they abide by those conditions, eventually at the end, this judgment is sealed or conviction is sealed.
I question whether that's correct. So it's a suspending the imposition of a sentence, not suspending imposition of sentence. When as I read the 19th statute, what the court is doing, typically courts, when they grant a suspended imposition of sentence, don't impose any sentence. That's the whole point of it. They don't say, I'm going to give you 15 years in the penitentiary, and if you do these things, you won't go to the penitentiary. They say, I'm not going to find you guilty. I'm going to impose conditions for you, and if you don't comply with the conditions, then I will impose a sentence.
Correct. Usually they're placed on probation during that interim period.
So suspending the imposition of a sentence is not a sentence in my mind. Am I wrong about that? You just said the opposite.
No, I don't think you're wrong, Your Honor. Like I said, a suspended imp is a completely nuanced thing. It's not simply a suspended sentence, as Justice Kaczynski was asking about just a second ago. Again, with the suspended sentence, usually there is, as you were just talking about, Justice Myron, a term of years with, like in this instance, it was 10 years with 7 years suspended. That's
so
the suspended portion.
Mr. Pickner's original motion was under, I think, 3111, I think it was only under the 23A311 statute. Later, the arguments between counsel morphed into also including the 23A2719 statute. But I think the original one was aimed at this type of sentence. His original motion was aimed at this type of sentence, not the idea of us of the suspended imposition.
So his original motion was, I believe, I can't remember the exact title, but it was something along the lines of motion to modify. He does cite to 23A31(1), and in that motion, he specifically asks for a suspended imposition of sentence. He does not ask for a reduction of sentence. His request is that suspended imposition.
Question is an important one, because as Mr. Bell points out in his brief, we're here not from the order that would vacated the original sentence and imposed the ordered the suspended imposition. We're here on your motion to correct a sentence.
Correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Bell makes an argument, and you know, you gotta, either it's a sentence or it's not a sentence, because we're here on the strength of an argument that the state is seeking to correct a sentence. If this is not a sentence, there's no sentence to correct, illegal or otherwise.
Right, I understand what you're asking.
You know, we had this earlier. We had an effort by the state to directly appeal this case, and
yes,
the court divided on that. But three members of the court said, you know, this is not a direct appeal. And so we're back, and now on the strength of an intermediate appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder if that earlier proceeding or that earlier appeal dismissal doesn't live on a little bit and manifest itself in Mr. Bell's argument.
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
Why are we here? Why does the state have appellate jurisdiction? Why can the state come in and seek to correct a sentence based on illegality when it's really not a sentence at all? It's the absence of a sentence. It is the suspended imposition of a sentence. A sentence accompanies a conviction that then ripens into a valid judgment of conviction. We don't have that. That's gone. We have only the suspended imposition of sentence, which is not a sentence. It may have conditions and look in some ways like a sentence. It is not, in my mind.
In absence of a sentence, as you were saying, Your Honor, it's still the court handing down the discipline, so to speak, for the defendant.
I'm sorry, forgive me. This has to matter, though, because there has to be a difference, and I think that the statute is really get at this. There's a difference between the suspended execution of a sentence.
Yes,
that
Your
is
Honor.
A sentence.
Correct.
That is a conviction. And the suspended imposition of a sentence, which may in some ways look like it. But the whole point of the latter is that the record's sealed, there's never a sentence imposed, there's never a valid conviction of judgment, and in some ways that is good for the
mm-hmm.
applicant, right? Because then they avoid the stigma of that conviction, and that's why those statutes probably exist. We can agree on that, I hope.
Yes.
But they're vastly different.
Yes, they are different, Your Honor.
And you're here asking, under the strength of 23A31(1), asking to correct a sentence which I'm not sure exists anymore. Because you lost on the effort to appeal directly.
Correct.
So how do we get at this on the merits?
I think, again, absence of a sentence is still a sentence. It wasn't like this is a situation where the defendant was found not guilty. There is no finding of guilt. We still have whether absence of sentence or sentence, it's still a sentencing mechanism. The person still has conditions imposed upon them that they must comply with. It's not like the individual is free to go
what's
about.
What's illegal about that?
I'm sorry, what's that?
What's illegal about?
It's illegal because the court didn't have authority to do what it did.
Which may not even be a sentence. And I know we're kind of going around and around.
So if Justice Salter is correct, he's essentially saying that we were incorrect in dismissing the original appeal. And based on that premise, the state's being denied the opportunity to ever have raised the issue that it was entitled to raise in the first instance.
That would be correct, Your Honor. I mean, if this court determines that the state's doesn't have the ability to appeal this suspended imposition, and the state didn't have the ability to appeal the initial motion to reconsider order, then the state is without recourse, and the circuit courts essentially have unchecked authority then, or unchecked ability to go ahead and enter sentences or non-sentences without any recourse.
Ordinarily, the state doesn't have the right to appeal a sentence.
Correct, but it does have specific There, again, we have the ability to appeal an illegal sentence.
You have the ability to file a motion under the 31-1
yes,
statute.
We can ask for a discretionary appeal. Excuse me. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, under the 31-1 statute, you have the ability to do what you did in this case, which is to go to the court and say, you have imposed an illegal sentence, and we want you to review that issue. The court reviews that, and then the argument perhaps would be that upon a denial of that type of motion, then we should have the appeal of right. Even though we wouldn't ordinarily be able to appeal the sentence, you should be able to appeal that.
Correct, Your Honor.
So a suspended imposition can only be entered if the defendant does not have a felony conviction. Is that correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
In this case, he did have a felony conviction, technically.
He technically did, which was the conviction from within this case. Yes, Your Honor.
He totally did.
He There's did. Really yes, he went to prison. It. He went to prison. He has that conviction.
Even if he didn't go to prison.
Correct.
He really has a conviction.
Yes, he does. Which, again, was then vacated by the circuit court. I will yield the rest of my argument to my rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, you may proceed with your argument.
Mr. Bell, is a suspended imposition of sentence a sentence in and of itself?
May it please the court, counsel, to answer your question, Justice Salter, I think that's a question. Let me back up. My position is it is a sentence. I don't know if the answer it makes a difference as to how the court gets to its decision. I don't think it makes a difference as to whether or not Mr. Pickner should win this appeal. And it goes to maybe, and certainly ask questions if you want, but I think to frame the issue, I think there's really three issues before the court.
Before you get there.
Yeah.
Is a suspended imposition of sentence a sentence itself?
I think there's case law that would indicate that it is, Justice Salter. The reason I would say that is that this court has authorized an appeal from an order granting suspended imposition of sentence, and in that case law, it essentially calls it a sentence that can be appealed. I understand the rationale that you and Justice Myron said, which is it's not really a sentence. It's a separate order that is pending the sentence.
It seems fundamental to the whole idea that we can seal it, and then no one ever sees it. And that's the whole nature of the relief. So that seems like an important part.
Your Honor, or Justice Salter, I would agree it's important. I think the court addressed that in part in the State versus Anderson decision, and in Conway versus Hughes, which are 100-year-old cases, but they did discuss this. Those cases talk about the difference about a suspended imposition of sentence and a suspended execution of sentence, and whether or not the constitutional provisions and statutory provisions, which are different than what we have today but are similar, grant that authority. And in the Anderson case, I read it to state that the word suspend and the original statute that was used encompasses both the ability to suspend execution and to suspend imposition of the case, of it. And Conway versus Hughes, they don't necessarily answer the question. Not Conway versus, excuse me. Make sure I'm citing the right case before I go too far. Yeah, excuse me, Conway, Attorney General Conway versus Judge Hughes. They discuss that as well. And I will kind of back up, and maybe I should say that, and it kind of gets to where I'm going at with that, is that's the last issue, is a Rule 35 motion.
It's your last issue.
What's that?
It's your last
yes,
issue.
Yes, excuse me. My third issue that I raise is a Rule 35 motion the appropriate mechanism to do this? And I would answer that question is no, for one of two reasons, and it depends on how the court gets there. If it's not a sentence, you can't use a Rule 35 motion to correct an illegal sentence.
Well, that was that kind of what I thought your argument was.
What's that?
That was, I thought, what your argument was.
Yeah, it is. It certainly is. It's one basis by which it can be. The other basis.
That's a kill shot if you win on that.
Correct. I agree. I mean, and I think that's a very valid reason. And to the argument that the AG's office has is, well, we don't have any recourse if that's the case, I would respond with that with two reasons. One is that's pretty common in the criminal system. There's final judgments, and the legislature has not granted the state the right to appeal. They do have a recourse in that situation if that's what the court holds. That recourse is to go to the state legislature and ask for the legislature to grant them the authority to appeal in those situations.
It really feels inappropriate to think that the state has no recourse to bring to the court a challenge to the court's authority to actually do something that it's doing. To say the court can't do it. Because when I first became a judge, the very first advice I was given was, people are going to ask you to do things, and your first question should be, where do I get the authority to do that? And that's the precise question that the state has brought to us, is where did the circuit court get the authority to do this, which is kind of a clemency, really. What you asked is, you said under 31, find me not guilty now, even though you found me guilty before.
I would respectfully disagree that it's clemency. We'll get to that in a second. I don't disagree. I mean, it does seem harsh that we would just say you don't have any right to appeal that. There are situations where that is the case, but I think more importantly...
Can you think of another instance where a court can take an otherwise valid final judgment that has been passed upon by an appellate court, and any error is adjudicated as not erroneous or harmless, and you have a righteous conviction for all the world right there as a matter of record? Can you think of any other instance where a court can just say, you know what, I'm going to throw that out, and there's no appeal, the state can't say boo about it, and there was nothing wrong with this conviction? Nothing.
Justice Salter, I think the answer is I cannot think of a situation where you just completely throw away a conviction. I will say this, though. I don't think that a suspended imposition of sentence based off of our state statutes is a throwaway of a conviction. I don't think it's clemency. I would submit it's not pardon. To go back to Justice Myron's question, I do want to answer the second part of that, though, is there is a remedy. It's the remedy that the AG's office used for 30 years regularly in the 19-teens, 1920s, 1930s, and 1940s. It's the remedy that we used in Hughes versus Conway. The correct method by which the state should have handled this is through a writ. The answer is to bring a writ of prohibition or a writ of certiorari to the Supreme Court in an original proceeding, saying that the circuit court does not have the authority to do that. And it could have. That's how the court regularly resolved these situations in the 19-teens and 1920s. They abandoned that. They waived their right to do that by letting the court move forward with this. Had they brought a writ of prohibition, that's one, there could have been a writ of cert, but let's say that they would have brought a writ of prohibition during the pendency of this motion, before Judge Mayer made the decision, procedurally they could have done that. And the AG's office has done that dozens of times if you go through the court's history on the litigation of these situations, because this was a major issue to the state in the 19-teens all the way through 1940s and all the way up to 1974 when we amended the Article 5, Section 5 of the Constitution for a third time. That's the proper remedy to do this. I mean, that is the procedure that should have happened, and it's not what was done in this
case. So thank
case.
You for that. But let's go back to the other point that you stepped away from, which is the idea of getting away from the finality of a judgment. You agree that what you're asking for, the only way the court could give what you were asking for, is to vacate the judgment of conviction.
I think it's modifying the judgment or an order, a judgment. I think an order granting a suspended is a judgment. Whether or not it's a sentence or not is a separate question, but it is a judgment.
What's a judgment? I'm sorry.
An order granting a suspended imposition of sentence. As it relates to it. I think it is a modification of a judgment, taking away the finding of guilt and imposing, and you can only do it for 2 years. I mean, there is still, regardless of a position that one takes on my client's position or these situations, This is a regular tool that circuit courts in the state use. In the last 5 years, it's been done roughly 1,000 times throughout the state based off of information in the record from the court administrator's office. There is a finality to it, and I refer to it as Rule 35. That's one of the sub-notes of it, of the dash 1 or the dash 18 SDCL. There's a 2-year limitation where the court has jurisdiction, and I think that is the rationale for that is based off of the Article 5, Section 5 language that we currently have, and it's based off of the rationale that, for example, the Supreme Court used in the Hughes versus Conway case, which says as long as the state legislature has indicated that the court still has jurisdiction of the case, it's not final, it's not forever. At the time that we were dealing with in the 1930s, it was actually only 30 days because the state had not passed a 2-year look-back period that we have now. They said you can do it for 30 days after, the circuit court has jurisdiction prior to the appeal. I don't know if it's 30, it might have been 60 days, excuse me, at that time. It's whatever the timeline was for the file a notice of appeal at those time frames. I think we switched.
So under that theory, then the 2 years, so the premise that I was sort of operating under with some of my questions was, this is final. It's final on direct review. You're outside the cert period to go to the Supreme Court, and for post-conviction, that is universally regarded as the test for finality. Your view is it's really not final until the 2 years.
Correct, and I think that is true. If the court does not have, if it's true that a final judgment is a final judgment, you can't change it, it's final, then the entire process by which you can amend a judgment at all goes away. Then there's no ability to even suspend execution of a judgment for those. Well, if you don't have jurisdiction, you don't have jurisdiction, Your Honor. It's if you don't have the ability to do anything because it's a final judgment, and Article 5, Section 5 doesn't extend that. Now, that's not my position, but if the logical conclusion of the fact of saying you can't change a conviction because you don't have jurisdiction outside of the after you make a...
Well, then I think you get into the details in the text of the rule. As Justice Kaczynski was sort of questioning about, do you have eligibility criteria that matches? Does this work? Is this what the legislature requires? Certainly the legislature probably, as it has done, would have the authority to say, no, in some instances, you do have a final judgment, but in some instances, exceptionally, we're going to allow the court the authority. I don't know that that means it's not final, but they just have specific authority within a window of time to do something, whatever you want to call it. But then there's a question, I suppose, once you go down that road about eligibility, what's the final conviction mean? Is it really a felony conviction? Is it disqualifying and all of those sorts of things?
Your Honor, and I understand. I mean, as to the eligibility question there, I would say I think that by modifying the judgment, taking away the finding of guilt, you are eligible as it relates to the situation. But I agree. I mean, you have... there's eligibility. That's one of the factors you would look at as it relates to that. I would submit, though, that one would have. So,
your original motion came under 23A31(1), and then later, as the arguments developed, the court also brought into it as its source of authority, possibly 23A27(19). Tell me which one is the cleanest source of authority from your point of view, the one that you would rely upon.
Your Honor, trial counsel brought one based off of, you're right, dash one, just a motion to modify the sentence. I think in argument, he kind of supplemented that by also talking about the motion to suspend. I think both of them grant the authority to do what we're talking about here. I think actually that the Rule 35 is probably the stronger argument based off of the rationale in the Anderson case, which said that the word suspend includes both the power to suspend imposition and to suspend execution of a sentence. But I think you can also get there by saying that you have the authority to reduce a sentence. I think that, I mean, of course, that gets into the question, is it a sentence at all as it relates to it? But if it's not a sentence, I don't think Rule 35 is an appropriate remedy for it. But I think you can do it either way. I think rule or the dash one mechanism or rule 35, as I've referred to it and it's referred to in code, is one mechanism. I think the cleaner actually is because I think case law of this court says that the word suspend in those statutes includes both the power to suspend imposition and suspend execution, but to answer your question. But either way, it gives the trial court authority to suspend imposition of sentence, which is extremely broad. And quite frankly, I think it's important to remember that the position that the AG is taking is the exact position that the AG took in 1921 when the court decided State versus Anderson, and the people of this state amended the Constitution explicitly to grant the authority to do this thereafter. And then it was the Conway versus Hughes case where they said that State versus Anderson was abrogated based off of the amendments to Article 5, Section 5 of the state Constitution. And then in 1974, when we wrote a substantial number of the UJS provisions in the Constitution, it was even broader to give a circuit court judge or a trial court judge the authority to suspend a sentence unless prohibited by the legislature. The 1930 was to essentially say that as long as the legislature authorized it, it was allowed to. In this case, though that's certainly not barred by the legislature. In fact, I would submit that both Rule 35 and Dash 19 statute give a circuit court the authority to do this. So, Your Honors, with that, I would simply state that, one, I don't think Rule 35 is the appropriate mechanism. The appropriate mechanism to do this would have been a writ. They didn't do that. They've waived their authority to. I would submit that this is a commonly used tool for circuit court judges to encourage behavior and to make sure that there's reformation, which is really why we're here.
But
I mean, my client.
What about that? I'm sorry, forgive me for interrupting, but what about that? You know, you're right. I mean, this is widely done. Judges throughout the state have done it, you know, since, I don't know when, for a long time. You know, we also had, and I know you do some federal work, we also had the sentencing guidelines for 18 years, and we thought they were mandatory, and they weren't. And thousands of federal defendants were sentenced under the mandatory federal guidelines, which we now know, 18 years later, violated the Sixth Amendment right to a jury trial. So what effect do we give to current conventions or practices or things that might be disrupted as a result of a decision that's adverse to you in this case?
I see my time's on. You can answer the question.
I think that, as I would see it, I mean, certainly what circuit court practice is not binding on this court. I do think it's something that can be informative to the court as to whether or not this is a legal sentence, which I think is a pretty, maybe it's persuasive authority to the court as relates to it. I don't think that based off of it being common practice that is binding upon the court. The only other thing would be, I mean, if a Rule 35, and it's an illegal sentence, is there, and that's the proper way to challenge this, we're looking at tens of thousands of potential cases this court is going to potentially be looking at, because in five years there were roughly 1,000 cases. There's probably a lot of other people out there who are in similar situations where this court would have to, the circuit courts at least, and potentially this court would have to go through and determine how many of those cases are actually valid sentences. But I think, and that same practice happened after the mandatory nature of the guidelines went away, and there were a lot of Rule 35 motions based off of that as well. So, but I think really it's just a question of it being persuasive authority on the court. The circuit courts have been doing this. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Thank you. You may proceed with the rebuttal.
Justice Alter, to answer your question you had just asked Mr. Bell, frequency of use across the state does not equal legality. So just because it is happening with frequency across the state does not make what happened in Pickner's situation a legal sentence.
So maybe you're not aware of this, but I can't tell you how many times the Attorney General's office actually at sentencing has, you know, responded to a suspended imposition request by saying, have him prove it, or have her prove it. So that's a little different than the circuit court simply doing it wrong. that's the Attorney General's office actually encouraging and saying that this is the way to do it. And maybe it doesn't matter in this case, but I'd like to hear you answer that.
I will say, Your Honor, I do know, I think this was even addressed at the circuit court level with one of my colleagues served as the prosecutor in this matter. And my colleague did fall on her sword and say, Your Honor, I realize I have asked for this before. My eyes are open. I see now that this is not appropriate. And so I would just submit to you, Your Honor, that sometimes with age comes knowledge. Sometimes the longer we practice, we kind of see the error of our ways. You know, there's the old adage, it's called the practice of law, because we're constantly learning. It's not something you can perfect. And so if the Attorney General's office has asked for that in the past, that very well may be, and I'm not going to disagree with you, Your Honor. What I'm saying now is we've seen the light. We understand that the statutes really don't allow for this type of sentencing mechanism. And so moving forward, we'd like to go about the appropriate way.
So along with that lessons learned type approach, Mr. Bell suggests that the appropriate remedy for you here was at the time the judge undertook this modification of sentence or was approaching it, mm-hmm. you should have filed a writ of prohibition with the court saying she can't do this. She doesn't have the authority to do this. She is legally prohibited from doing this. You should direct her not to do this.
Certainly, Your Honor, that was an option. I can't speak to why that option was not taken.
But that seems to deflate your argument that we have no remedy if you just acknowledge that it wasn't, in fact, an option.
And that's if this court decides to take up that writ as well. I mean, it's not a straight shot to this court. It's still, hey, court, look at this issue.
Well, intermediate appeal wasn't a straight shot either.
Fair.
You had to ask
fair,
about
Your Honor.
To get it.
Except the earlier one. Would have been.
Correct. The original, or our first, votes. I should say, not the original, but the first, we did a notice of appeal, a direct appeal, and we were shot down by that.
But perhaps it points to the fact that maybe the court was right in denying the direct appeal, or dismissing the direct appeal, because in fact you have another remedy that was available, which was the writ of prohibition.
Perhaps, Your Honor. But we're here now on a motion to correct or the denial of a motion to correct an illegal sentence. And going back to that point, both you and Justice Salter had asked, both of myself and Mr. Bell, is this truly a sentence that can be, you know, is it a sentence? Is it suspended in position of the sentence? So is it a sentence? And as I pondered while Mr. Bell was speaking and listening to what he had to say, I agree with him. I do think the suspended imposition of the sentence is still a sentence. There is still this thing out there that does put conditions on the defendant. If the defendant doesn't comply, there is a judgment of conviction ordered. So
what are you suspending the imposition of if this is still a sentence?
It's still a sentence until, I would say it's a sentence until that file is sealed.
So if the defendant fails to comply with the conditions of the suspended imposition of sentence, then it comes back to the court on a revocation hearing, correct?
Correct, Your Honor.
And there's due process involved?
Correct.
Why is there, what are we revoking at that point?
You're revoking that order suspending imposition of sentence and entering a judgment of conviction and whatever else may go along with that. This case turns on a simple but critical point. A circuit court cannot undo a final conviction and grant a suspended imposition of sentence after a defendant has already been sentenced to prison and served that sentence, which leads to one result, that the suspended imposition in this case must be vacated and the original sentence reinstated. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your arguments this morning. The case is fully submitted. We'll be in recess for about 5 minutes.